Hello again and welcome to this interview in the series that is all about empowering a league of extraordinary mums on how to get more energy, that body we love, and get back that zest for life that we all crave, using the power of food as a first step. So obviously we're going to talk about more and more, and today's guest is perfect for this subject. Alex, thank you so much for being here. If I can just introduce a little bit about you. Alex is the author of Low Tox Life and the founder of a thriving online education hub. She's an author, columnist, speaker, and consultant at the forefront of a movement that is non-judgmental and tough on the system that got us here. Thank you so much for being with us today, Alex.
Thanks for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
I'm really excited about this interview. I know that, you know, before we hit record, I was saying that I ummed and ahed a bit about this interview series and, you know, giving people even more information about food, because we're so inundated with food stuff all the time at the moment in the media, and there's so much conflicting information.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so what we want to do is just give mums some first steps, cut through some of the confusion. We'll talk about some of the myths, and with your permission, we'll also look at some of the stuff that we need to pull into the picture that's not just food, but some of the other low-tox ideas that you talk about as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Can we start with your story, Alex, and how did you come to be doing the work that you do?
Purely by accident, but by divine inspiration as well. Like, the two things ended up kind of fusing. So I, when I was out of school and out of university, I went into a career in cosmetics, got promoted quite quickly, and left cosmetics because I literally couldn't explain it for myself at the time, but I felt allergic to the job, to everything, just couldn't be there anymore. Yeah. And you know, in your early to mid 20s, when you've just not really even had time to think about whether you would choose to do something, as opposed to kind of that lovely ego of, oh, let's promote you, you're so enthusiastic, let's keep giving you more, it was a really fantastic first realization that you could make choices around your career, and very very definitive ones, even if the choice at that point in time was, I just can't be here anymore. I need some space to think. So left that. And of course, naturally, the next step was to become a singer in a nightclub. And it's a very clear career progression there that my mum was thrilled about. And I just, because I had always sung at school and I really loved singing. I'd done musical theatre at uni. So I started singing, and in between the sets, because you'd always have like a good hour between like going on and singing another few songs and then having another break, I would chat to the bartenders. We all kind of became friends, and they would always be trialing like exciting different concoctions on me, and I'd be like, oh, that one's nice, and how'd you put that together? And then I thought, well, singing in nightclubs isn't really quite making me the money that I was making in my corporate career. I need to fill this gap. And so I started bartending, and a few years later became a really well-known celebrity bartender.
Okay, I didn't know that part of your
another story. Random career tangent, that was flying all over the world, winning cocktail competitions and creating drinks for all sorts of people, and running a beautiful little bar in Sydney that was sort of the bar where all the celebs and authors and journalists and everybody would come to drink, and it was just wonderful, so much fun. Yeah. But, you know, scrubbing down fridge doors at 2 a.m. took its toll on me, and I started consulting in that space. All the while I had a personal journey going on of health, having tonsillitis multiple times a year, taking antibiotics multiple times a year, and then just starting to realize, oh, when I eat certain foods, I feel funny, I get bloated, what's up with that? And, you know, of course, that antibiotic cycle plays a huge contributing role to those sorts of symptoms that start to come on after years of use. Mm. But you don't know all of this. You just know you've got really crappy tonsils that need sorting out now. Yeah. And so you take them until they stop working, of course. And that was quite scary when I was on the third round of the strongest antibiotics you could be on and they just didn't work. Yeah. And so a girlfriend recommended I go see a naturopath, and I'd never heard of what one of those was before. This was 15 years ago. Yeah. But I went, and And I absolutely adored Christine over the following years. She sorted out my tonsils. She got me to remove gluten from my diet way before it was cool to do that. And not everybody, I believe, medically needs to do that, but it can be one of those foods that's extremely inflammatory to some, in this case, me. And even though that was devastating as a half Frenchie who loved her croissant quiche and all those sorts of things, it actually is the singular biggest change that I've made in my life that landed me where I am today. Wow. Guarantee you, had I not been asked to, that I told that I had to go gluten-free, I would have never started reading, well, or certainly not for a long while yet, started reading food labels and ingredient lists to find where the gluten was to avoid things. Yeah. That would never have opened my eyes up then to, well, what's all this other stuff in here that I've been eating? Which never would have opened up my eyes to the idea that if I eat produce, it's far less complicated and I just actually have to learn what to do with it, yeah. Which never would have then meant that I started cooking and learning how to put flavors together like I knew how to do so well with drinks. It was just kind of this beautiful natural progression from there, and I started to love being in the kitchen of the bar that I worked. They would let me go on the dessert station and help Zach put the desserts up. And so I would just be learning all these things, and they knew that I had this gluten battle. So the chef was teaching me about the different weights of flours and how they impact baking. So I started to take that knowledge and learn how to create my own gluten-free recipes for all the things that I loved in non-gluten-free land. Yeah. And it really just got me cooking and made me realize how few of my friends knew how to cook. Yeah. I was like, what? You know, I became the go-to for, like, if we needed snacks, if we were having dinner, let's go to Alex's, we'll bring something because she knows how to cook. Mm. And to this day, I know that most of my friends are terrified to cook other than following a very strict recipe.
Yeah.
And I think that's really sad that we don't have a beautiful relationship with produce, because the way it is now, we're so reliant on packaged products and not enough on produce. And for me, that's, you know, forget what type of diet you subscribe to. The real food diet, where we move from products over to produce, is the most important one. And that was the foundation of my realizing I wanted greater transparency in the day-to-day things I was choosing, which then naturally spilt out over to looking at what I was putting on my skin, looking at what we were cleaning our home with, looking at what we were surrounding our home with in terms of textiles, furnishings, flooring, paints, you know, all the sorts of basics that we make decisions around every day. And yet we make decisions based on price and cute labels, yeah, and not so much on what's in them.
Well, that's how I choose my wine.
Yeah, well, yes. I mean, to be honest, it's quite often how I choose a wine. If I'm not sure and I want to try something new, pretty label, medium price point, done.
Alex, was your mum a cook? Did you grow up with home-cooked meals?
Half and half. We were very much convenience kids of the 80s.
Yep.
And mum, well, our family, when I was one, we moved from London to Chicago. Yes. So that was sort of 1976 to 1980. We lived in Chicago. Mm. And that was the rise of feminism, amazing movement that has given women so much. But we can't help but look at what it's taken away from the family home in the process of that, because processed food companies come in, see that the women are working, see that they're not having conversations, like see that the men aren't going to all of a sudden start cooking half the meals in the 70s. It just wasn't going to happen overnight. So they saw a massive growth opportunity for their businesses to start creating ready meals, packed mixed stuff that you just needed to add one thing and put it in, and then the microwave was born, making it all even easier, even more disconnected from our foods. So I think the fact that we were in Chicago at that time means that we kind of naturally just got swept up in how exciting all this new easy food was, because there was no analysis around what was in the food. Oh. And even the first sort of easy ready meals weren't too bad. I mean, they were frozen and that was about it. The food additives were really starting to go into hyperdrive in the 80s. Yeah. And in the late 80s with the birth of genetically modified foods and all those sorts of scary things.
Yes.
So
we were also the generation that has grown up with that wonderful food pyramid.
Yes, exactly. That's right.
Late 70s. And so that's what we've all grown up on. And now it's only now that we're understanding how it's actually been so detrimental.
That's right. And if you look at the nutritionist who was originally on the, what was her name? Something Light, Denise Light. I'll give it to you if you want to pop a little note underneath for the listeners. But she had made a recommendation of 9 to 11 serves of vegetables in the original kind of tabling. And then there were some backdoor deals done with meat, dairy, grain industries to change that. And she said that it was going to be, she warned that it was going to be the single biggest contributing factor to obesity that we could possibly be making. Mm. And they went ahead and did it anyway. It was criminal, yeah. I believe.
Yeah.
And while there's absolutely nothing, I would never demonize wonderful meat raised on an ethical farm, beautiful yeah. dairy where the bobby calves aren't being killed and organic pasture, you know, great pasture raised, organic free range. It's not that, and beautiful sourdough, you know, it's not that any of these foods are evil. Mm. Absolutely not. I don't believe. It's just that that vegetables are king. Like, where are the phytonutrients, the phytochemicals, the polyphenols, all the things that we need? We talk about macros and vitamins, we're obsessed, but we don't talk about all these other things that plant foods give us that nothing else can, and we really, really need them. So, yeah, back to the kind of did your mum cook?
Yep.
She did. We were Mauritian, French Mauritian on mum's side, so always had lovely curries and beautiful French foods, but we also loved our Maccas, our frozen potato gems, our char grilled Charlies on a Friday night, and which sometimes became Monday night, which also became Wednesday night sometimes.
Yeah,
because mum was president of the PNC, so sometimes it was busy and we just had to pick up takeaway. And takeaway seemed like food that you kind of cooked yourself, except more delicious. We didn't know that there was MSG in it and hydrogenated oils and all that kind of stuff. You learn that later.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how do we take that, you know, having grown up with this idea, and certainly, you know, one of the, there's a few myths that we're endlessly trying to bust through because we've spent so many years wholeheartedly living the high carb lifestyle and this sort of, you know, this convenience food lifestyle. How do we take it back and just start to make some easy shifts? Maybe it's, you know, what are your sort of first suggestions, Alex?
My first suggestions are to just make a little list of what your average meal looks like. And at the moment, if it looks like a bowl of cereal at brekkie, yeah. and then if it looks like a sandwich at lunch, and then if it looks like pasta with a bit of sauce and maybe some veg for dinner, like a salad or something, then look at the food pyramid you've made for yourselves in that mix. So put those, you know, like grains at the very, like this huge bottom, and then go up and kind of make your own ratios of where you're at. Mm. And as I said, it's not that grains are evil. It's just that for me, what eating a heavy grain-based diet does, especially when we have to call into question the way a lot of our grain crops are grown these days, and especially with the way a lot of synthetic vitamins are added to packaged grain-based products like folic acid, which don't do so well for so many of us who have the MTHFR variant in our genetics. Mm. We can't process folic acid, so there's no point in putting it in there. In fact, it's detrimental to us,
yeah.
And we're still not going to be able to make folate from it. So, think about all of that and think, actually, what your main goal here is to start increasing the variety of food which you eat. Forget following dietary protocols. It's going to be too complicated. You're going to feel like you've failed 3 weeks in. You're going to feel like, why aren't I getting the results of all these amazing people with six packs? It's going to make you feel like you're comparing yourself to everybody else who's doing a better job than you. Forget about it. And actually just think, okay, if I'm having those three types of meals and I'm having grainy snacks, let's start with the snacks. A, I don't believe that we really need to snack if we get our meals right.
Yeah.
But B, if you're having like just a few crackers or some succotars or those sorts of things for a quick tide over, then swap those. Make a whole big stack of carrot sticks, capsicum sticks, celery sticks, cucumber sticks, chuck them in a Pyrex in the fridge, ready to go. have a couple of beautiful dips on rotation that you really love the taste of, whether it be hummus, whether it be smashing a quick half avocado with a bit of sea salt. Simple, like so simple. And do that on a Sunday night. If you're going to do avocado like that, though, you have to press some parchment paper right onto it so it doesn't go brown, because that's yuck. And
I use lemon juice.
You can use lemon juice as well. Some people don't like the tang, but, you know, whatever you fancy. And then that's the snack. So at least you've started to add some nutrient variety in between your meals. Yep. And what's wrong with snacking on a piece of fruit? Mm. Eating fruit is just so delicious. It's nature's candy, a beautiful sweet apple, yep. a yummy mandarin, a couple of slices of watermelon, like, you know, just increasing our plant foods instead of being quite so grain heavy. Yep. Is really where I would start. So add a piece of fruit or two in a day and add those veggie sticks in a day. That way, at least while you're trying to figure out how to learn to cook a bit better, how to learn to mix it up at breakfast, how to learn to not have sandwiches be the go-to at lunch, that's your first base.
Yes.
Second tip is let's switch out that sandwich at lunch. And the way that I do that is, it doesn't mean you can't have a sandwich, you know, once or twice. It's not. But this is not about demonizing food once again. This is about increasing variety. And if you just become kind of obsessed with how much variety you can put into your day's foods, then that alone is going to be such a huge impact for you. And so for me, that would mean if you're cooking one tray of sweet potato roast sweet potatoes at night to have with a roast chook or some pan-fried steak or whatever you're having, cook two trays, and then that second tray becomes the basis of a really good chunky salad with a little bit of the chopped meat from whatever you had the night before, or a boiled egg if you didn't have that type of protein, or even just a little tin of beans if you're vegan or vegetarian. Yes. And then add some rocket leaves, add some avocado, goat's cheese if you fancy getting a bit posh. And I always love going with some spring onion or fresh herbs, because that makes it feel really posh to me. Yeah. It feels a bit more cafe.
Walnuts are good.
Walnuts are great, absolutely. So, and then, but the fact that you had that sweet potato roasted, cold and ready to go, and a little bit of meat left over. So instead of cooking 500 grams for a family of three or four, cook, you know, 700 grams and have a couple of lunches worth, then you've got the basis of something really fast, mega nourishing that you can chuck in a Pyrex if you work in an office, or you can slap together in a bowl if you're kicking around at home. And then that way, look at that, you've just changed your snacks over, you've changed your lunch over, no skin off anyone's nose, no increased cost, no increased effort.
Yeah.
With a bit of planning, and then you've just got your, let's make your cereal, maybe perhaps a better brand, a muesli that's got a few more nuts through it to increase the nutrient variety that way. And then just make dinner, you know, sure, it's fine to have a bit of pasta, rice, whatever you like to have. That's those carby meals often of a nighttime, wonderful for adrenals and sleep, especially for women. But don't go overboard, you know, make it a fistful size. And what can you increase? What are your favorite veggies? Can you chuck a whole bunch of zucchinis in, slice them in half, roast them, which means you get to forget about them for 20 minutes instead of watching something steaming and worrying it's going to overcook. Yeah. And then you've got some beautiful roast zucchini to chuck through that pasta or that rice. You know, just thinking about variety. If you always buy cashews, get almonds next time, then macadamias, then pecans, then walnuts. Always thinking variety means you actually sort of joyfully force yourself into a curiosity position instead of I have to eat healthier. You know, that's never going to make us motivated to actually eat the food that serves our body. Whereas, what can I try that's different? What can I buy that I didn't get last time? What does that even taste like or look like when I put it through a meal? You know, curiosity means joy, whereas I have to eat better means restriction, means change that you might not be ready for, means stress, means how am I going to fit this all in? Whereas just leading with curiosity and variety, I think, is a much better way to play it.
Yeah. You talk about nature's lollies with fruit. I get that from roast veggies. You talk about that roast veggie salad.
Oh, same. Roast pumpkin. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's delicious. Yeah.
Anything, all roasted veggies is just my idea of, nature's lollies. So
yeah.
If we go back to that, you know, there was that team of nutritionists that put together the original food guidelines that were then stuffed around with by the agriculture department and turned into our food pyramid. The original guidelines talked about not more than 2 serves of carb in a day. And, you know, more than that is what is sort of caused our epidemic of obesity and diabetes. But just as a guideline, I feel like, you know, it's not about getting it right every day or beating yourself up if you have a bit more than that occasionally. But just as a guideline to work towards, you talking about how we look at our snacks and breakfast, lunch and dinner, that no more than 2 serves a day is kind of what I have rolling around in my head if I think about what's for dinner. Well, if there was carbs in our brekkie, then I think about something different for dinner. Just as, Is that how you think about it a little bit, or?
I tend not to overthink it too much. Yeah. I tend to think about what can I replace with greens at every opportunity. Yeah. So, like at breakfast, you might normally have 2 pieces of toast, Vegemite and butter, for example, like the average Australian. I would have 1 piece of a grainy, kind of seedy, dark almond-based toast. So there's a lot of nutrient variety in that loaf. And then I would have 1 or 2 scrambled eggs on top of that. And then I'd have some sautéed rocket.
Yep.
So, you know, halve the grains, double your veg. And that's pretty much, you know, rather than, you know, I'm not a nutritionist. I haven't done a PhD in nutritional science. And so rather than kind of try to state what I believe is right, you know, when science is so conflicting in this area, and it feels like some cultures tend to thrive on higher starch in their foods, others not so much. So there's genetics at play, and I've done my genetics, and, you know, while high fat is all the rage at the moment, for my genetics, it's not really appropriate. So, you know, it's so bio-individual, but if we come back to that idea of variety and thinking, well, 2 pieces of toast doesn't leave me much room for veg in this meal because I'll get full from those. If I take one of those pieces of toast away and saute some zucchini or baby spinach, I saute rocket, I love rocket, a little bit of butter and sea salt, then you've increased your nutrient variety of that meal so dramatically. You've increased all those beautiful phytochemicals that you get from dark leafy greens and all the other goodness that comes, bile production, so many benefits to dark leafy greens. And you've cut down the carbs, but it wasn't a focus about cutting down on the carbs.
Yep.
It was actually a focus on increasing nutrient variety. Do you know what I mean? I just feel like psychologically, women tend to respond. I know I do. And it means lasting change. If we respond well to something, then it means we're actually going to be able to go through with it.
Yep. So the follow-on from that in my mind is looking at cravings when we, you know, when we look at, but I'm actually just really craving. How do we address that? You know, if we're so used to eating lots and lots of carbs in our day, say, and we just feel like we're craving it. Is there a way that you deal with that more
easily? Yeah. So look, I'm a huge fan of seeing a nutritionist or a naturopath one-on-one, even if you just really open with you, you say, look, I don't want this to become a monthly thing. That's not in my budget. I just want some help setting up some guidelines for myself and to just ask you about the cravings I've been having, because often those cravings might be nutrient deficiencies. And they could also be bacterial imbalances in your microbiome. So our bacteria are very, very loud. They're very good at telling us what they want. And remember, we're only 10% human, 90% bacteria. And so if you look at the cells, and so it stands to reason that our population in our gut, if there's something overgrown in there like candida, you could just crave sweet, starchy things. You can just like, and you can be overridden by those cravings. And if you feel like you're overridden by your cravings and you can't just go for a walk around the block to silence them or have a few carrot sticks instead to silence them, if that's not working, I truly believe you should see someone one-on-one because there's probably something deeper at play there. Mm. And it usually is quite an easy fix.
Yeah. Okay. So if we just recap on what we just talked about, it's variety and real food.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, what fascinates me, Edwina, is when We put the Real Food Rockstars e-course up that we have, and we have six courses. But this one, I think it was about early 2015 we started it. Yeah. The first group came through because it used to be run as a live course. And day three hit. And everyone's like, where are the meal plans? Where are the shopping lists? When are we going to be told exactly what we need to eat?
Okay.
And I was like, no, that's not what's going to happen here. You need to listen to your bodies. And let's really have a think about how drastically wrong it might be that we would believe the answer to our health is outside our own bodies. Like, how quiet the conversation we have with ourselves is, not even a whisper that we can hear right now for so many of us out there. We're going so fast. We've got so much to do. We can't even take the time to think about, sit back after a meal and go, how did that make me feel? You know, if you feel jacked up, high, almost a bit drunk, you've probably got a candida problem and you ate too much starch. Yeah. If you feel lethargic, and really heavy, you've probably got a bile production issue and you're not able to get through the fats that you're trying on your whiz-bang new keto diet. Yeah. You know, if you feel really energized and quite happy to just stand up and get on with the rest of the day, then that's a pretty awesome indicator that you've hooked into some food that really works for you.
Yeah.
And in terms of figuring out what our best macro and micro balances are and what we really, really need, often just listening to ourselves. Funny story, I've just been coming through mold illness and still recovering. It's going to be quite a long journey, and I got very, very sick. Resistant weight loss, all sorts of neurological heart issues. It was a very, very scary time. But if I look back in retrospect at my food choices and the things I started to crave, like obsessively crave when we moved into the apartment that it turns out had water damage, it was all of the bitter leafy greens. Like I just couldn't get enough of rocket, couldn't get enough of dandelion greens, couldn't get enough of all those sorts of quite bitter coriander. I became obsessed with coriander. I became obsessed with quite savory, quite sour, quite bitter green juices. Didn't want anything sweet in there. And my body knew that mold grows on sweet things, so it didn't want anything sweet. And it knew that if you really look after your bile production, you give your bile a chance to flush out the microtoxins and get them through the liver and get them out of your body. I mean, how crazy is that? I wasn't having a conscious conversation with myself, but you can bet that I have a far more conscious conversation with myself now. Like, well, that's weird. Fennel, like every day for 3 weeks. What's up with that? And then you do a bit of research and you find some really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
I think most important is to switch from products to produce. Because we can all crave Pringles. Once you pop, you can't stop. It's actually the MSG talking. It's not us having a natural craving.
Yeah.
Once you're in produce land, then you can start to have some really exciting dialogue with your body and go, oh, wow, no, didn't like that one at all, or that doesn't really work. And checking in with a nutritionist or naturopath every couple of years to say, really strange, you know, starting to get all these issues around FODMAP sort of foods. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean you need to cut them out for the rest of your life. Often it means there's something bigger at play that you need to work on to be able to reintroduce some of those foods. You know, so I'm fascinated by how little we have traditionally listened to our own bodies in this 70s, 80s, 90s, noughties era.
Yeah.
Because we were just so busy chasing marketing ads and dietary protocols that we saw on TV shows and celebrity trainers telling us we had to ditch all of this and, you know, eat only bacon. You know, I could go on and on and on.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have to remember that that's all to make cash. If you productize a way of eating, you're then able to sell products.
Yeah.
Whether that's a program, whether that's a shake, whether that's, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think we just need to start being really smart. Instead of just going on the hype waves, give ourselves some time to analyze and really not only analyze the exterior information that we're we're coming across, but also the interior information if we choose to explore one of those protocols.
It's all part of this really busy life, isn't it? It all seems to come back to this busyness and not allowing time. So we fall into the trap of convenience foods and eating the wrong things because we're so busy we don't have time to cook. And it's also that not stopping and actually hearing what's going on in our own bodies or acknowledging. And I think another part, just while it's in my head, another part of that picture is the normality of chronic ill health. Well, I just get headaches, you know, getting headaches every week or every month. It's actually not normal. You're not a headache person. There's something, your body's telling you something. And this, yeah, normalizing ill health is another thing that we see, you know, more and more of. It'd be lovely. Yeah. Stop and listen.
Yes, that's right. Just stop and listen.
Yeah, that's so. We've spent most of our time together talking about food. Are there some other bits that you would like to add in here that are also really important pieces of this low tox lifestyle that we're aiming for?
I think, you know, food is often where people start. It's certainly where my journey started. Yeah. It's what we're putting inside ourselves. So it's certainly the most intimate impact that any better choices for us or the planet make. But often I find people tend to make more success of change if they realize that it's bigger than them. Mm-hmm. You know, so like this whole first world problem, Nick is in a not situation we're in right now where, you know, we're so obsessed with self that we like chastise every wrinkle, we chase after every line with Botox, we, you know, it's so about ourselves and how we look, and, you know, it's so inflatedly focused on the self that sometimes I think the best thing we can do is think about the impact that making better choices also has on the world that we live in, whether that's our personal care, cleaning products, you know, all that sort of stuff. That's a whole separate 3-hour chat that we could be having on that subject.
Yeah.
But, you know, to just kind of think about the psychology of change, like think about what eating that produce does. Think about so many people who can't ditch the junk. I always issue a challenge. I say, think about getting really intimate with what those ingredients are, what the company is that's made this product, what their values are, like literally download their shareholder agreement and statements. Have a look at how they pay their lowest paid factory workers. Yeah. Have a look at how much they paid certain politicians to vote certain ways, because all of that's online. Yeah. And then once you've done the, like gotten right down and dirty with that cherry ripe or packet of Pringles, think about your own values and think about what your mum and dad taught you, or what, you know, if you didn't maybe have great role modelling at home, what you decided to bring into your own psyche to lead a better life and to teach your own kids. And often that's kindness. No lying, do good for others, think about how you can help, make sure you get some me time, like some really lovely little values that we collect for ourselves that we know we kind of need for ourselves to feel good and to feel like we're doing good for, in our lives. And then quite often we'll realize that the those values that we've created for ourselves that we believe in so strongly don't match up with the values of half the stuff we're buying for our homes if we think about the companies and their values.
Yeah.
And so for me, that is just one of the most exciting psychological journeys we can take ourselves on, because it becomes impossible to wish you could have Pringles once you know how they're made, the research that went on to achieving the bliss points in the brain to get us addicted to, you know, no good, honest, loving person would do that knowing the ingredients could cause health harm and environmental harm if you look at the pesticide, herbicide, genetically modified ingredient story. So I reckon, you know, it's not talked about often, but it's something I like to bring up because it's often a little a little stone unturned for people who are like, I just want to stop wanting those things. I just want to be able to ditch the junk and feel good about it and feel like I'm not attracted to it anymore. And sometimes that deeper psychological work, does this match with my value system?
Yeah.
If I research how this is made, where it's from, and am I okay with the answer to both those questions? Sometimes that's the thing that makes people go, as if I would ever touch one of those things again.
I just think that's absolutely golden.
Yeah. Well, it's powerful, right? Really powerful.
It is.
And we're going so fast that we often just don't even know that we could do that work. I had no idea what was in Pringles or any of those. I mean, enter any junk food here, you know, or like buying your cereal and then you realize it's made by Nestle and then you realize, you know, that Nestle does a few dodgy things around the world. And, you know, like you think, oh, I'm not going to buy cereal. I'm not going to fund the other horrible things they're doing. No way. My cereal funds that. Yeah. And so, and that can be really exciting for people. And then it makes you realize you're part of a big, beautiful world where you can literally shape that world from your shopping basket. Mm. And then you're even more motivated to back the little farmer who's at the farmer's market and say, oh, I buy my food from Joe. And when I make my stir fry that night, I think of Joe and his family. And then I'm helping his kids be able to afford textbooks, a formal outfit and a family vacation once a year. Mm. You know, that's the kind of cool stuff about supporting the little guy, supporting produce. You know, it's beautiful. It actually starts to feel beautiful. Yeah. Instead of, oh, I've got to eat carrot sticks. You know, that's like, it's like those marketers want us to feel that way about beautiful, wholesome produce. Yeah. And let's just be smarter than them. I'm issuing a challenge.
You've actually just given me a tool that is going to be really useful, because I try not to do the whole good and bad thing with food. I've got four children. And my older ones now are working, doing babysitting jobs, and their first port of call is always to go and buy junk food. Mm. And I'm just thinking that a conversation around, you know, what that money is actually supporting might be a far more powerful conversation.
Absolutely. And think about our teenagers. Mm. They're often very socially aware. Mm. They're often doing environmental projects at school. They're often really up with human rights. Mm. And you know, if they care about those things, then you can say, well, did you know that that chocolate company actually has child slavery in their production cycle? And like, should we find a chocolate together that maybe there's a company that is doing the right thing by people and planet? That we can still have chocolate. It's not about not having chocolate. And you can tell them I eat chocolate every single day of my life. But it's about, you know, finding brands that we can support that make us feel really good about that little treat that we have, ditch some of the junk that's in some of the more mainstream stuff at the same time, and also support a better world. Like, that's super powerful for our teens, I think.
Chocolate's also really, really easy to make.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know, right? It takes 3 minutes.
Yep.
In the freezer, 15 minutes later, you've got a delicious treat.
Yeah, you can add whatever you like to it, nuts and whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, to illustrate this point beautifully, I know we've probably got to finish up soon, but it was my son's birthday recently. It was his 9th birthday. And that's kind of like where they're all socially starting to realize that certain kids have the healthy lunchbox and all, you know, all that stuff's happening. And I see it as a real opportunity to build resilience. Yeah. Like, okay, so what are you going to say next time Thomas says your recess looks like sick up?
Yeah.
You know, like, actually, deal with this and shut that freaking Thomas down, you know, instead of feeling like you need to start eating grain waves just to fall in line. Like, that's not how life. That's not how bravery and leadership is built. Mm. And so I relish those conversations and opportunities to build resilience. But even I crack sometimes, even I feel weak sometimes, and it came to planning this party and I was like, maybe I should just get a few like little snakes and things, and it's just a lolly bag just so everyone feels like, you know, Sebastian's a cool kid. And I was like, Sebastian is a cool kid, damn it. Like, I talked myself off the ledge. I thought, I'm going to make the cocoa caramel chews from my book. Yep. And we're going to wrap them up like I did in the photo shoot. It looks really gorgeous in little parchment paper. So proper, like, old school, old fashioned looking caramels. And I put them in a big jar. And as the kids left, yep, they got to reach in and grab a handful. Yep. And so I was saying stuff like, make sure you grab a couple of extra ones for recess tomorrow. And, you know, we made it fun. And then I heard Seb saying to a whole crew of kids who were all eating my cocoa caramel chews, my mum doesn't need to buy lollies, she invents them. And everyone was like, this is so cool, and I've had mums ask for the recipe. And
awesome.
You know, so, like, I think that social piece is sometimes the hardest piece, and it comes up, yep, in every book talk I've done,
yep,
across the whole country.
Yep.
How do I do this and have my kids feel good about it, have my husband feel good about us making these changes, not feel like the social leper when we go to parties, all those sorts of questions that they're really valid. And we want to make sure that we feel proud and able to make the decisions we want to make around food, but we also want to not feel socially ostracized.
Yeah.
And I think two things here. One, use it as a resilience building moment, just as the couple of little examples I've shared there around custard with blueberries that apparently looked like sick up, and homemade custard, mind you. I bet not everyone else is getting that. And then the lolly situation, but also to sometimes go with the flow. The average healthy kid who's got a well-functioning liver and kidney system, yep, who doesn't have autism, ADHD, sensory processing disorder, Asperger's, medical diagnoses that often do mean that if you eat one single red snake, it's enough to send you off the rails for a day.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about those situations. And yes, we have to be a lot more careful in those situations as parents. But if you've got a kid who's otherwise healthy, to not freak out if they experiment and try. You know, your bookends of your days, the breakfast and dinner that you provide for them, let's focus there where we have the control, but let's not freak out if they choose a meat pie at the canteen on a Friday when they get to bring their own lunch money.
Yes.
It's not going to break the bank if you're doing all these other beautiful things to support them and yourself for that matter. You know, I say in my book, if you love a good cup of tea, even though we've just talked about how UHT, long life carton milk, is basically dead, useless food, a burden to an overburdened dairy industry as it is that can't function in a healthy way because of how much dairy we want from, yeah, them. But if you're at the school morning tea and someone says splash of milk and you happen to glance and see it's a UHT bottle, don't freak out. You know, we do what we do most of the time so we can go with the flow some of the time. And if I can leave everybody with that as a bit of a mantra of acceptance of oneself when things aren't quite perfect, mm-hmm, you know, then please take that and run with it.
That's perfect. I've done the gamut of that. You know, I've got four children. My oldest is 19 now. And when he was born, I'd just finished studying naturopathy and I robbed him of a few joyous birthday party experiences.
I know. But I think it's a passion, isn't it? You become so passionately, yeah, upset,
yeah,
that the food system is the way it is and that this shit, excuse my language, got into, yeah, these, yeah, products in the first place. It is so horrible. Mm-hmm. And our sense of justice can be so lit up and you can be so passionate, mm-hmm, that it's natural to want to strive to just remove it all.
Yeah.
And I think in my own journey in the beginning, yeah, I would be lying if I didn't say I had a few months where I was a real purist,
yeah,
while I was trying to figure it all out for myself. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, when I started an education business, I never wanted someone to feel inadequate on my watch. Mm-hmm. I never wanted someone to feel guilty for, yeah, one little misstep. I mean, it's not even a misstep. It's just life, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, now this is why I have, it's not an everything in moderation, because I really don't think there's a place for things like genetically modified food and MSG in foods. And, you know, there are some universal evils that I will always champion against. But how about stop looking at it like mistakes and start looking at it like sometimes you just go with the flow and forget about it.
Yeah.
The gelato in the summertime, because all the kids are on the beach having a gelato, like, you know, just let little Jimmy have the gelato, like just go single scoop, you know, if that's your compromise. Yeah. Go with something that doesn't look bright blue, perhaps, you know, as another compromise.
The rainbow.
Yeah, you can always make a great choice, like a better choice within a limited offering, you know, kind of like a buffet at a barbecue. You might just skip the brightly coloured orange dusted chips and go for the plain popcorn. You know, there's always a better choice you can make, and we can teach our kids to make those choices without, you know, shutting them off to some of the joys of just going with the flow in life.
Yeah, love it. That's absolutely perfect. I know you've got a little gift for our audience.
I do.
You got a minute to tell them about that, please?
Yes. So funny, we've been talking about celebrations, isn't it? That was not planned at all. We've kind of just spoken organically. But the book that I would love to offer everybody is a downloadable book. It's 130 pages, so it's quite a good little chunky book. And I created it to help people with their low-tox entertaining endeavours. And this is for everything from the food to the drinks you serve, to the way we can reduce waste in entertaining, especially party picnic situations. There's so much waste in those arenas. Yeah. Cute little things like using your Who Gives a Crap toilet paper wrappers to make Christmas bonbons or party bonbons, like all sorts of fun things in there. So the food section is divided into feasts. We've got a vegetarian feast and a couple of omnivorous ones, a couple of like knock it out of the park desserts to share with friends that require a little bit of effort. But, you know, sometimes when you want to put a showstopper together, it's worth a couple of hours in the kitchen and doing something really special. Yeah. Some gorgeous drinks from back in my bartending days. Ooh. And, so, you know, it's just going to be really helpful for people who are scared of entertaining in a healthy way and making people feel like, oh, this is pretty boring spread, or, you know, I am half French. Deliciousness is never compromised.
Yeah.
Beauty and the love of entertaining is never stops.
Yeah.
And I think we just need to learn to entertain in a different way. So the Celebrate ebook helps people do that.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely perfect. I've got to share, I've got my bar history as well. I actually worked in a bar it was a 24-hour nightclub.
Oh, wow.
Called Nonstop Rock. And I actually danced on the bar there. I don't think many people know that story about me. So it's
you had your very own Coyote Ugly past. I love it. So good.
Thank you so much for your time, Alex. It's just been just golden, just perfect.
You're super welcome. Super welcome. Thank you.
We can do this again and maybe add in some of those other low tox ideas in another interview. It'd be great.
Yay. Yeah, absolutely.
Terrific. Thanks so much. Bye for now.
Bye.